Welcome to the Layer 8 Podcast, Season 2. This season, we'll again hear from the experts. These experts are social engineers and open source intelligence investigators. Sometimes, they'll tell us stories about their experiences, and sometimes, we'll have some questions for them. We hope you'll enjoy them.
For this episode, we welcome Siobhan Kelleher. Siobhan is a former sales representative who has always had social engineering run in the family. Now, Siobhan is working in higher ed and digging deeper into OSINT. She joins us to talk about the OSINT mindset, what it takes to get started, and to be a great OSINT investigator. Let's hear from Siobhan.
I wanted to talk a little bit about how I got to where I am with OSINT and kind of share my path with everybody. So right now I'm a senior information security analyst and I work in higher education. I don't necessarily do a whole lot of OSINT for my actual job, but I do really enjoy doing it as a hobbyist. So I'll talk a little bit about how I ended up doing that. A really long time ago, I started working in sales and I worked my way up through retail sales into business to business. And business to business sales relies a lot on social engineering and OSINT. I didn't know what those things were at the time. I just kind of knew that I had to research people so that I could gain their trust and that I had to kind of speak to them a very specific way in order to get to the sale. And they teach you things like, you know, 5 times of talking to somebody before they're really going to trust you. They teach you when you're asking questions and you want to get a yes answer to ask questions 3 times, and then you're more likely to get a yes answer. And you learn things like body language, using open body language, like your hands are not crossed, they're, you know, open, your legs are not crossed, and you're nodding and mirroring as you're saying things to people. Or if you're, you know, the person you're talking to is kind of leaning, you kind of lean because that makes them more comfortable with you. And the more comfortable you can get someone, the faster, the more likely they are to buy something from you. So I learned all of those things in sales. And when I switched over into IT, I didn't really know that they had a place that they belonged. And I had a long sales career before I went into IT. And I got into IT with a degree in digital forensics and computer investigation, which was actually really interesting as well, because during that process, I worked with one of my professors who worked for ICE. And he taught me all about body language and the Reed interviewing technique. So I learned a lot about how to interview people backwards, interview them forwards, be able to tell when their stories were changing, if they were lying, being able to tell when someone was comfortable. And all of those things I took with me back to the sales world and used them there. And it was really, really helpful. It gave me an edge over a lot of other people in sales. When I graduated with my degree, I decided I should probably use what I paid a lot of money for. And so I left sales and started working in help desk, which was so much fun. But you still use a lot of those same social engineering techniques, mirroring and making people comfortable and gaining their trust, especially as a woman on a service desk. And I was working for the military. So you have to really gain their trust and you have to do it very quickly or your call times go up too high. So I used a lot of the same social engineering techniques that I had learned when I was in sales on the desk. I saw an opportunity eventually with one of my employers to create user awareness training around OSINT and phishing attacks. And so I created that, and that was used throughout the whole company to train people on being aware of phishing and you know what information could possibly be out there that would create like a spear phishing campaign towards them. And I used it to leverage myself into a security role, which is what I recommend to anybody in service desk or in another role that really wants to get into security, is find your niche, find your way in, whether that's user awareness training or just becoming really good friends with the security people, volunteering for different projects. Once they know who you are, you're more likely to be able to bridge over. But way before I got into sales, And as an adult, I reflect back on my childhood a lot. My dad was always kind of a tinkerer. He always wanted to see how things worked. He always wanted to take things apart. And I kind of grew up with that. And I also grew up with what my dad likes to call the gift of the gab, which is, you know, he says all the Irish have the gift of the gab. And we used to sit around and tell stories. And the stories weren't true, but the point was to see how long you could get people to believe the story that you were telling. And I remember this one time we were back in Ireland, and all the cousins were sitting around and my dad was there and my brother, my older brother was telling this story about how he worked for a hospital, and he was someone who did like the laundry, and he would bring the scrubs in, fold them and put them away for the doctors. And he was standing outside the operating room, and there was a big glass window, and he could see that they were doing a surgery, and he was folding the scrubs and putting them away. And all of a sudden the doctor started screaming, and there was only one nurse in there, and something had gone wrong with the surgery. And so the doctor's waving at the glass, come here, come here. And he goes into the operating room, and the doctor is, you know, hold this and hold that and hold the other thing. And anyway, the story's not true, but he told it so well with so much detail and so in depth. It always kind of stuck with me to this moment. I can still picture that room and that doctor and that situation, and that talent of being able to tell a story that is so completely false with so much detail is also incredibly helpful with social engineering and sales. It helps build that you know, small talk and conversation that you might have with someone. So, I mean, I guess I've been raised to do social engineering since I was a little kid, really. You know, and he would give me tips like, you know, smile and a compliment goes a long way when he wanted to get into a building, or if he, you know, we were out in Boston and he would want to use a bathroom, but not a public one. He would go into an office building and just walk in like he knew where he was going. And he'd say, just stay with me, pretend you know where we're going, and no one will bother you. And those are all little things that I brought into my sales world, and again, into security. So it's funny how little things you learn as a kid turn into career things. I didn't know what OSIM and social engineering really were, like, formally, until I went to my first DEF CON, which was DEF CON 23. I remember because they were hacking the Tesla. And I went to the SecDef village because I wanted, or the social engineering village, because I wanted to see, you know, what it was. And I sat there, and I remember watching them in the SecDef booth and thinking to myself, I do this all day. This is what I do in sales. I call people, I try and figure out what technologies they have. I try and get them to read my emails. I'm trying to get their attention and elicit information from them and find out who the person is that makes the decisions. And you have to be really crafty, otherwise you get shut out real quick. And thinking like, wow, I could do this. This is the thing. And that kind of went away for a while because I was working service desk and I couldn't figure out how to make the two click. And finally, I heard about the Layer 8 conference, probably on Twitter. And I ended up going to the Layer 8 conference. I think the last time it happened in person was 2018, I think. The talks were really cool and I really enjoyed going and hearing them, but then I stopped in to see what the CTF was about. And I remember being upset because I had never actually done real OSINT other than, like, you know, Google search and McRae's Blue Book and Facebook social media searches. I had always used the IntelliTechniques website. They had this really cool tool where you type in your one term and it would search all the sites for you. And he had pulled that down that week because of issues. And I was totally panicked. And I walked in the room and I talked to the person who was running it. And I was like, I don't know what to do. And he's like, just sit down, just try it. Just try it. And it was me and a friend of mine did it with me. And the two of us working together with very little knowledge came in seventh. And I was so excited and so proud. And it was really one of the first times that I'd ever done anything like that. And from there, I was just hooked. I just couldn't stop. So I read everything I could get my hands on. When I first started out, it was really the IntelliTechniques site and the OSINT framework, which is fantastic still. And Google, just all the Google, so much Google. And as I started to get more developed, I started reading more blog posts and watching conference talks. I watched a lot of Rachel Toback. I watched a lot of Althea Dennis, which, by the way, was incredible. As a mother, to see a young woman up there with her baby doing this and winning was just, I felt so seen and represented in the IT community. It was incredible when she won. It was incredible to see that. And then, of course, Chris Hagnati from the Social Engineering Village, all of his stuff, anything I could get my hands on. And then Patrick Laverty, who had come and talked at Security Camp, which is a small higher ed focused conference. And that was, I think, the last time you were there was just before which was just before Layer 8, just before Layer 8 conference. And I remember being like so excited, like, oh, you're here. And like, this is what I'm going to go do this weekend. And my coworkers thought I was the biggest nerd. They were like, why do you want to search people on the internet? I'm like, I don't know. This is really fun. And then Tinker, which was an incredible talk that was at Layer 8, and Snow. And I follow them on Twitter and love, love, love reading their stories. And I remember that, and I can't remember, Patrick, if you made this comment on Twitter or if it was at the conference or when it was, but at some point I overheard you say or saw you say that it would be really cool to get someone with a sales background to come in and talk about how sales and social engineering kind of match up together. And I let it rattle around for a while because I don't do social engineering for my job. I kind of just do social engineering for life, but I do OSIN as a hobby. And late last year, somebody finally gave me the confidence to just kind of put the talk together. And I tried it out at Security Camp and it went really well. And then I just kept pushing it. And that's where I am now. So thank you for the inspiration. So why do I do OSINT? I do OSINT because I really like to learn all the things. If there's something to be learned and it's challenging and it involves puzzles, I want to do it and I want to learn it. It helps me relax at the end of the day when I've been, you know, I do a lot of engineering work and a lot of, you know, dealing with servers and appliances and things, and it's a lot of fun and I really enjoy it, but this is different because it allows me to use security in a way that is fun, is innovative, and can help people. Finding the TraceLab CTF has been huge for me in this past year with COVID. We can't really leave our houses. We can't really see our friends. It's kind of sad and depressing. And so knowing that I can spend a couple of hours on a weekend or a night doing something that might really help somebody, might really make an impact, is absolutely huge and really helps my mental health big. So it's really nice to have that. So when I start doing an investigation, well, I guess I'll talk a little bit about how I start doing investigations and what tools I use. When I start doing an investigation, I try and look at who it is that I'm looking for and think about what kinds of things they might do. So if I'm looking for, you know, a young girl, I might try and think about what are 16-year-old kids into today, which is important because not all of them are on your typical social media. They're not on Facebook anymore. They're not on Twitter anymore. They're on different platforms. So you have to kind of connect with that generation to be able to think like them, to be able to find them, which can be challenging. And I start to build a little profile. Who's the family members? Where do they live? What kind of people might they be? And I really start pretty broad. I start with a basic Google search and see what comes back and cast a net from there. I have a lot of luck with social media. I'm just learning geolocations, so I'm not so hot with that, but I'm getting better. I've learned pretty quickly that mom's Facebook pages are usually gold. Moms tend to not lock things down. They tend to have everybody open. They tag everybody in there and they love to do that thing where they list out who their family members are right on their Facebook page. So I've had a lot of luck with mom's Facebook pages. So if you have a mom that has Facebook, tell her to lock down her Facebook page because she's leaking your stuff all over the place. One of the most important things that I've learned doing this is that you're not always going to find a lead. You're not always going to have an answer. And if you get stuck, it's okay to get up and walk away. Sometimes I'll get up and walk away and go do some yoga, or I'll wash my face or something mindless, like dust something just to take my mind off of it. And while I'm doing that, it allows my mind to rest for long enough that all of a sudden I have an idea like, oh, I didn't check here. Or, oh, I didn't check there. And I should do this thing or that thing. And it helps that I'm very, very, very stubborn. It helps. That's definitely a trait that I would recommend for anybody who wants to do OSINT is being stubborn. Because the moment you give up, you'll come up with something else that you should have checked or you wanted to do. And for me, I want to circle back a little bit on the CTFs. It's, you never really know whether or not they find somebody. You never really get an answer. So it's really important to put that out of your head that you're going to know whether or not anything came of it. Especially as a mom, it can be really emotionally taxing to think about the fact that you're looking for someone's missing child. But it's really important to just know that you've done what you can, you had a good time, you've competed, And for me, I don't necessarily look at competing against other people. It's not important to me where I score, because sometimes I have 20 minutes, sometimes I have 8 hours. What's important to me is that I did my best, and I use them as a really great opportunity to identify my weaknesses. I wasn't able to get an answer for whatever flag because I don't know how to do that. And so I write it down and I use that as an opportunity to learn more about the skills that I need to grow in so that I can get better at what I'm doing. So I should mention some of the tools that I do like to use. And again, it's social media, and sometimes just Google searching is going to get you very, very, very far. I do like Google dorking better than a regular Google search, because you're going to get more targeted results back when you're doing that. And it's just incredibly easy to learn. It's a great skill to have, and it's a lot of fun to kill time with. Like, sometimes I'll Google for S3 buckets when I'm bored. Spiderfoot is another tool that I really enjoy. It's a really good beginner tool. I know a lot of people, especially these days, talk a lot about how tools go away. And that happened to me. Buscador went away when I desperately needed it. So you won't want to be 100% reliant on tools. But if you're first starting out, having something like Spiderfoot, where you can type in a username or an address or a real name and just scan and get back a bunch of stuff, at least gives you a place to start and it doesn't feel so overwhelming. So if you want to learn how to start doing OSINT and you're not doing a CTF, what I recommend doing is searching yourself. And this is how I started out, really looking for people, was searching for myself. And then, fun short story, when I got married, I had asked my father for my addresses of my relatives multiple times, and he did not get them to me, and I needed to send out my save the dates because they were now running 2 months late. I went online and I searched everyone by name and where I think that they might be living, and I was able to find their addresses and put my letters in the mail. So even just simple things like that are good exercises for learning how to search for people. Don't search for people in malicious ways without their permission, but the best person to start with is yourself and maybe a willing family member or friend. Put your name in Google, see what comes back. Put your Facebook username in Google, see what comes back. Crawl through that information and see what you find. The more you dig, the longer you spend, the deeper you're going to go, the weirder stuff you're going to find. But it's going to give you practice. Create accounts. Create a Twitter account. Lock it. See if you can find it. Create a Facebook account. Lock it. See if you can find it. Create yourself some sock accounts. Forget you have them. See if you can find them. Not that I've ever done that. So, you know, it doesn't have to be a CTF that teaches you how to do this. You can do this with any name. Just get on the internet and see what you can find. Dig around in public records. Find your house. Dig around your public records for your house. See who lived there before. Were there mortgages held on it before? All that stuff. It's really cool to find and learn about. And it's very easy once you get in there and you start, just Google. I use Excel spreadsheets and sticky notes. Like, we're never going to run out of trees. I love Excel for keeping things organized. That's been my biggest challenge, is organization when I'm doing an investigation and trying to stay on task. Other things like the Wayback Machine and Google Cache. Google Cache has saved my butt so many times. I was recently doing an investigation that involved image abuse, and the person had gone in a couple days ahead of time and deleted all of the images off of the website. And because it was a regular, you know, website, it wasn't in the dark web, I was able to Google the site, but I wasn't able to get the pictures because they had deleted them. I went into Google Cache, all the pictures were still there. So then I was able to take those images, run reverse image searches to make sure that they weren't still up anywhere, and gather more information. I also found through that the website had rotated quite a few times. So it was one site, then it became another site, then it became another site, and that helped me track it down because some of the old versions of it were still accessible and the images were still posted there. So Google Cache is amazing, and the Wayback Machine is equally as amazing. When you're looking for things that may have been deleted or removed, they're great places to look. Even for things like social media sites like Twitter, you can look up on Google Cache and the Wayback Machine. As long as it's a public post, it's going to have it. So you can look and see if maybe your target's information has changed. Maybe they've deleted posts recently, and all of those things may give you a new place to start looking again. And then back to Google searches. Google searches have provided me with so much information. And oftentimes I'll Google search and I'll find a public record or something like a news article or an arrest record or obituaries, which are fantastic resources for information they contain a lot of names and locations of the relatives of the person who's passed, and you can use those names and leverage them into Facebook searches or Twitter searches or any other search to get information about them. Other sites that are good to use are the people sites like White Pages and Spokio, and those are great. And they do have a paywall, but if you're a little crafty, you can get around that. at work, not at my current job, but at a previous employer, I had a user who got a really horrible email with threats against them and their family. And I was able to take the username from the email with a quick Google search. It came back with Facebook profiles and a blog. I used that information to get kind of an approximate location. And then I used a people search to find exactly where they were and handed that over to police so that they could be protected. It's always really scary when end users get malicious email, and it's something that's growing in our society. Unfortunately, I'm seeing more and more of it every day. And so that's one of the things that I'm grateful for this scale is that, you know, when an end user does get a bad email, I can try at least to do something to make sure that they're protected. So it gives me a little bit of peace of mind. But I guess the biggest point that I want to make is that none of this is incredibly challenging. You know, the tools that I've listed are like Google and Excel, and it's not really hard. Anybody can do this with some effort. And I think a lot of people who look at OSINT get caught up in the idea that, you know, you have to be this computer wizard. You have to be able to program in Python. You have to be in information security, and you don't. You just have to have the ability to, you know, be a little stubborn and want to learn. That's it. And you can do this. It's not incredibly hard. And the more people that do this, the more people that participate in CTFs particularly, the more kids can be found. And I don't want anybody to think ever that they can't do this because they don't know how to use Linux, or they don't know how to use a special tool, or they don't understand the command line, or they don't feel like they belong in the community, because we all belong. If you want to help, you belong here. And it's important that everybody understands that. And I think I felt a lot of that early on, was that, you know, I don't belong here. I'm not smart enough. I'm not good enough. Well, I don't do this for a job. I just do it for a hobby. And that's not the case. And the more I talk about it, the more open and welcoming the community has been. So try it. Don't be afraid of it. And if you don't like it, that's okay. You don't have to do it again. But don't let your fears stop you from trying something that you may really, really love doing and you can do a lot of good with.
Thank you for listening to the Layer 8 podcast. You can find out more information about us at layer8conference.com and find more podcast episodes on many of your favorite platforms. We hope you enjoy these episodes as much as we enjoyed making them.